Interesting how thoughts occur to you at random like that. Just listen to this Christopher Cross tune. Including me, I've heard this song for years. Remember when the album won all those Grammys that year? You know, he was the next big thing. And I still couldn't pick him out of a lineup. You could show me five people that have no idea which one was Christopher Cross after all these years. I should go look him up. Last hour here, your calls. Those are the numbers. Hope you take advantage of that. The everyday is not to be under stress here. It doesn't have to be about you being an extreme adventurer or an extreme athlete. This is about finding that portal into the otherworldly, whether it's a purely mechanical, physiological reaction to extreme deprivation through suffering, through the euphoria of you know, the long-distance runner around the neighborhood. It doesn't have to be somebody who's gone to the top of the mountain or the bottom of the ocean. It's just, if you have explored the infinite, how did you get there? And do you have, as you're hearing this conversation with Maria Coffey, an insight on what that infinite is? One person says they're not actually from this dimension. We'll talk about that with her coming up next as we start taking your calls on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So that's what Christopher Cross looks like. Huh. Kind of looks like my pharmacist, actually. Taking nothing away from my pharmacist, however. I mean, for all I know, he's had a Grammy-winning album out too, but I never would have thought that's what it looked like. Now we're getting to Maria Coffey, Explorers of the Infinite, in our last hour, and the phones are very active. We'll start with Eddie in Lawrence, Kansas, on Coast to Coast AM for Maria Coffey. Eddie?
Hey.
Hey.
How are you doing?
Terrific. You're talking with Maria.
Hi, yeah. Eddie.
Hey. So I wanted to draw some parallels between the self-flagellating monks and that sort of monastic lifestyle and, you know, some of these extreme athletes. And I wanted to point out, you know, a lot of the activities these guys are performing, these extreme deprivation or really long-term sort of pain or, you know, those sorts of things, they can trigger the release of, you know, endorphins and special opioids and polypeptides that cross the blood-brain barrier. And, you know, activate selectively and deactivate selectively different parts of the brain to create sensations like, you know, special connections with the universe or whatever. You know, you can, depending on who you are, how you get there, I suppose that it can manifest in these different ways. And also, you know, I study cognitive science, and I wanted to point out that some of these sensations can actually be created, you know, either by drugs or by things like transcranial magnetic stimulation machines, called TMS machines.
So is it only internal?
Well, that's kind of what I'm trying to draw out, is that I think that it is only internal. Now, that's not to subtract from the profundity. Certainly, when you experience this sort of thing, you know, you can learn something about yourself or something about the environment or think of something in a new way that may be incredibly meaningful and profound. But if it really is just the way your brain is sort of reacting to these chemicals, then in what sense is it, you know, reaching a higher plane of reality or the infinite or something? It's still profound, but it's not, do you see what I'm saying? It's not necessarily something metaphysical, and I wanted to sort of just throw that out there.
Well, I think
actually if you read Explorers of the Infinite, I do turn to a lot of scientists in the book and ask them for explanations, and I actually cite many of the experiments that you're referring to. And, you know, so it'd be interesting for you to read, you know, what they have to say and to what extent they can give explanations and can't give explanations for all of these experiences. Because you're absolutely right. I mean, some of the experiences, particularly those that people have when they're having mini seizures of the brain, altitude, or in hypoxic situations, these can be replicated in laboratory conditions, but not necessarily ones that happen at sea level. And, you know, not everything is explainable as well, because I go into that quite at length in the book.
And I would recommend that particular exploration, too. Again, we're talking with Maria Coffey about the book Explorers of the Infinite. But isn't that, and I appreciate Eddie's perspective on that, but it's true to science, it would seem, that the scientists would say this is, we can explain all of this up to this point. Mm-hmm. And beyond that point, we haven't found a way to explain it yet, but we will. It will be science when we can finally explain it. And religious people, on the other hand, are willing to say, until you can explain it scientifically, it'll be a mystical religious experience. And they may never accept the science of it any more than a scientist might explain, use the religion of it. You know what I mean? Let's go to Maywan, who's west of the Rockies in eastern Oregon on Coast to Coast AM. Maywan?
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, I'm a psychic, and I was sent here to try to help the human race as it's getting quite problematic with the way things are going. And I wanted
sent
to
by tell... whom?
Pardon?
Sent by whom?
The powers that be.
And those are?
A lot of the people here on Earth. I will explain. I basically want to talk to Mrs. Coffey about the experiences of the climbers. The one that had a light following him or guiding him mm-hmm. was an angel.
The blue light?
Yes, guiding him down the mountain. And the one that had a rock come down, that was a puff of energy from God that moved the rock. So God is watching over those at high altitude, and the reason that their brain changes into another frequency is because of the altitude, and they're in another above frequency from what we are here. You're at a very, very heavy level, and even for my psychic abilities to work is very difficult because we got so many energy, negative energy forces with all electronics and stuff you have on the planet today.
So you get interference from...
Oh, yes, we get much interference.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. And
can I just say to you what the climate that happened to, the rock was falling towards him. I've just pulled up his quote in the book. He says, what that rock did is supposedly impossible, but maybe there are other realities. Maybe just occasionally in times of duress we can observe them. What I think now is that I ripped a little corner of our usual reality. Just for a millisecond, I moved into a different reality where gravity isn't fixed, and that what happened was to do with my own energy. So yeah, it's. I mean, people have different opinions or different theories on, you know, was it an outside force that caused that to happen, or was it a force of his own energy?
Bob is in Alberta, Canada, for Maria Coffey, author of Explorers of the Infinite. Bob.
Hello, Ian. As always, I love your program. And Maria Coffey, I'm fascinated by your research. My grandfather came here as an English nobleman, an adventurer, to basically with his brother to experience, I don't know what he wanted to experience. I don't know why he came here. In the effect, I am here in the far north, and I hate winter. But as that being said, he married the daughter of a shaman.
Hmm.
Now, as an adventurer, he was a cartographer, and he basically worked for the Hudson's Bay Company. It's a fascinating story, you know, the history of my family. And I have uncles and cousins that are bushmen. But, I mean, my question is, do you think there's a genetic link to shamanism? And has that entered into your research?
A genetic link? You mean between the adventurers?
Yeah, that somehow this could be passed down genetically, that the experiences of the people that you have spoken with could have some sort of link at some point to some a mystic of one level or another, that this is a physical inheritance as much as it is a spiritual one.
I couldn't say that I would agree with that. I think what they are sometimes doing is using the techniques that shamans use. For example, you know, when they shamans or Himalayan yogis use techniques to keep themselves warm in very, very cold conditions by breath techniques. Or when, for example, they do their longom, the walking for very long distances at great speed. So I think it's more that they, not even consciously always, use the same kind of techniques that the shamans use.
I wonder whether, you know, I remember I used to have these sort of paranormal experiences as a kid, all these sort of out of body things that used to happen to me. And I've mentioned this before, so I don't want to get into it too deeply. But I remember when I talked to my mother about it, and it surprised me that she, I mean, it took me years to finally say this out loud around other people. I thought I was just weird and was afraid of judgment or whatever. And when I finally told my mother that I was having one of these experiences on a fairly regular basis, she said, oh, I used to have them too. And I wonder whether any of these explorers of the infinite, if any of these people who have experienced something in the extreme, whether they, when they talked about it with their parents or with other relatives, whether anybody else had said, you know what, I've gone through that same thing, or I've had that same vision, or I've had that same person appear. Kind of like how the two climbers had the same experience of the shamanistic woman on the mountainside.
There is actually one climber, John Porter, who is in the book, and his father was psychic. And in his family, there was, you know, a history of people having having an openness to the paranormal. And, you know, John had precognitive dreams, which are recounted in the book. He's the only person that I can think of that I talked to that described that in a concrete way.
William, Wichita, Kansas, wildcard line for Maria Coffey on Coast to Coast AM. William?
Hi, thanks for having me. My question is, how do you feel of the Kabbalah and alternate dimensional consciousness and expressional views of worlds in certain divine locations and portals geographically?
I love that.
You know, it's not something I can speak on with authority, to be honest. I haven't studied the Kabbalah, so I really... Maybe I'll turn the question over to Ian. He's probably far better.
I think William's onto something in terms of there's some very interesting parallels about the experience of the soul in the Kabbalistic tradition. Mm-hmm. But as to the question about the portals, now you've been all over the world. Your travel adventures, taking people into these wonderful, hidden, sacred places, that speaks to something else, though. Are there not those places on the planet where you feel like the separation between this world and a divine experience is at a thinner place?
Absolutely. One of them is in Vietnam, where we've been going for 15 years, taking people on kayaking trips in Ha Long Bay. And for me, the outer reaches of Ha Long Bay, where we go, the far eastern side of Ha Long Bay, is a truly spiritual place, where I really feel as if I'm in that portal, you know, going into another reality. High mountains, of course, you know, when I was on Everest, I definitely felt that. But also, you know, even in the Galapagos Islands, when I'm walking among the animals there that accept me without fear, you know, I feel as if I'm in a very special place. I feel as if I'm in the Garden of Eden,
right,
in the Galapagos. So I totally agree that, to me, there are... I mean, the early Celts believed in thin places, where there was just a very thin divide between past, present, and future, where you could reach into those, where you could find that portal into another reality. And I definitely do believe there are very special places in the world that I feel lucky enough to go to sometimes.
Right. I've so been interested in that. As a non-traveler, I think for you 5 or 6 years now, I've been clipping articles about those thin places. Some of those monasteries in Ireland and places along the Prime Meridian and other places where people say it's right here. You can almost put an X on the map and say right here. Mm-hmm. You can feel that you're in one of the thin places. And I've always wanted to go to these.
My husband and I used to live on the west coast of Ireland, and there's a place there called Skellig Michael, which is about 8 miles off the coast. And it's an island that just rises straight out, sheer out of the ocean, and there's an ancient monastery on the top there, and you have to, it's quite a very sheer, steep walk up hundreds of steps to get to it. and it's out in the very in the exposed ocean. And truly, when you get to the top there, and it's they've restored the beehive-shaped huts that the monks used to live in, it is a place where you really do feel you're close to the divine. It's quite astonishing, and it has the same effect on everybody that goes there. You go there with a group of people, and everybody just falls silent. And I feel like that in Ha Long Bay too. It's just some places that have an energy that you don't find everywhere.
Well, it sounds like by the time I got up to that particular monastery in Ireland, the thin places would also describe my waist. I might actually lose these last 25 pounds that are haunting me. Let's get to Gary in Tennessee, first-time caller on Coast to Coast AM. Gary?
Yes. My call was actually about the biological connections of the endorphins, dopamine, stuff like that, that are transferred during a traumatic experience. Previous caller had asked that, and it was well answered. But the connection still exists. I've noticed that people that have PTSD, not just in a war scenario, but that have had a rough childhood, have seen things that children shouldn't see, stuff like that. They grow up, it would seem, without the spiritual connection. That the marked difference in a near death experience of your own choosing, or a traumatic experience that's thrust upon you. Is there any correlation there?
I write in Explorers of the Infinite that it's often the hardest, most challenging experiences of our lives that crack us open. And for some people, these experiences are chosen. They go out and they take great risks, but for many of us, they're imposed upon us, or they come without warning. And I like to, from my own experiences, I've seen these as gifts, unlikely gifts, but still gifts that rip away the layers of insulation that I was talking about before, the things that kind of protect us, things that kind of rip us out, rip us open, make us raw to experience. I don't know if that answers your question, but what I feel is that the model that these adventurers, in a sense, are giving us is that they to get to the portal, they really push themselves to the limit, and they choose to do that. But there are many of us who have reached the portal by having things thrust upon us, an accident or an illness. Or a near-death experience that we have not chosen, and yet still it can have that same effect of forcing us through into another reality.
Right. Mm. Well, we've got many more people. In fact, another full boat of calls hanging on for Maria Coffey. Explorers of the Infinite is the book. If you go onto her website, you'll also see more about these adventures that she does, like the Galapagos Island trip coming up. If somebody listening right now wanted to sign up for that, are there still a few spaces on the boat?
There are still a few spaces, and please call us and we'll talk about that.
It may be a little spendy for some people, as we say up here in the upper Midwest.
Well, we can maybe, they are the last places, we can maybe arrange something for them.
But either way, it'll be well worth the adventure, because this is what it's all about, those hidden places on the planet. Maria Coffey knows where those are, too. It's a whole other aspect to her life. Find out more by going to coasttocoastam.com and linking up to her there. And our last half hour of your calls, your questions, your comments about the exploration of the infinite next on Coast to Coast AM. It's Coast to Coast AM indeed, and yet it still seems weird for me to be around other people while I'm doing it. It doesn't feel like Coast to Coast somehow. I'm not stuck in my usual, dark room where I have zero light and just the occasional glimmer from the computer screen to read by. I'm here in Los Angeles at the studios of Premier Radio Networks. I'm in George's studio, to be more specific, and just down the hallway from George's office. And don't tell him I went in and licked his chair. Just don't tell him that. Don't tell me. But I have a. There are all sorts of things that that unique to this studio. One of these is just to have Jason in front of me and Gina to my left, and it's nice to see friendly faces. There's something I can do here that I can't do any other time I'm doing Coast to Coast, and that's ask somebody for a pen. Whenever I don't need one, but it's so nice. Half the time, I mean, like all the time, I'm looking for a pen around my studio and I have nobody to ask. And if I don't remember to bring one in, I'm stuck. And I actually have a chance to ask somebody, hey, can I borrow a pen? And I don't need one. I know next week I'll be searching for a pen, wishing I were back here again. We'll get to your calls the rest of this hour for Maria Coffey, Explorers of the Infinite, next. And find out whether you have been to that infinite place. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Maria Coffey is the writer of Explorers of the Infinite, and the woman to whom many people had reached out since the first since the book came out on the subject. Did we get to all of those things you wanted us to hear about, the updates from other athletes or other adventurers that wanted to tell you stories?
Well, there were many, actually, and one that I received that really touched me was from somebody who actually wasn't he is an adventurer. He's a climber, not an extreme climber, but still, you know, a mountaineer. And he wrote about, after he'd read my book, he dreamt about his father who died years before. And this is something that, you know, he never had dreamt about his father and had felt kind of quite, you know, separated from him even before his father's death. But in the dream, his father was skiing, and he said he felt as if his father was sort of skiing on a separate plane, and he looked at him in the dream and said, come on, go and get your skis. And he wrote to me, I woke up and wrote down the dream. I've always been a prolific dreamer, but with age it seems harder to remember them, but this one stayed vivid. It's curious to me that the dream was about skiing, something that my father loved and many of your interviewees did to extreme lengths. Yet the slope my father stood on was a pathway to another realm. Again, an echo of how the extreme athletes in your book use sport to reach a spiritual place. In the dream, it was as though my father was reassuring me not to be afraid, that death wasn't bad, that I could still reach out to him, that I could still that he could still communicate with me, that we would not be separated by his physical absence. And then he wrote, and thank you, Maria, for leading me to this dream. If I hadn't read your book, I'm sure I would never have had it. Hmm. And I mean, actually, messages like that have really touched me, you know, when people sort of feel that the book has affected them in some way and maybe, you know, helped them to get through to that portal that we were talking about.
Polly is in Texas on the wildcard line on Coast to Coast AM for Maria Coffey. Polly?
Yes. Hi, Ms. Coffey.
Hello
it's
there.
It's an honor and privilege to speak with you. Do you find, looking at the childhood experiences of these, the people that have been the adventurous ones or that have lived at the brink of death's door type thing, that nowadays their profiles or personality traits might be looked upon by, like in our public educational system, where kids that seem to be or exhibit those kind of behaviors are considered compulsive and ultimately are given drugs like lithium, which changes brain frequency. And later on in life, because of those issues not being met, that they need to have those releases, you know, that they've been on these drugs, that it causes antisocial, psychopathic, you know, type of adults later in life. And I'll hang up and listen.
All righty.
Well, it's interesting you say that, actually. I'm not sure if this is an answer to the question, but a lot of the athletes that I've talked to describe themselves as ADD. And, you know, they say they're definitely attention deficit disorder people. They need a lot of stimulation. They need to be doing different things. They need to always have constant challenges. So, I mean, I don't know if that answers your question, but it's kind of interesting that, you know, many of them say that. And they are, you know, they're definitely restless people. They're definitely people who, you know, just need a lot of stimulation and change and challenge, and possibly, you know, always did when they were children as well.
And possibly have always been self-medicating.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, through these extreme experiences.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one, the mother of one climber who sadly died in the 80s, Pete Boardman, I remember her saying to me after he died, you know, Pete was always climbing, you know, and when he was just very small, I'd look and there he was climbing up onto the mantelpiece or up into an apple tree. And, he, you know, he was always going up and up and up, and we could just never stop him doing that, you know. So it's as if, you know, there's something in them from the very beginning, you know, that, as you say, it's maybe self-medicating, that they just need to go and challenge themselves.
Joe is in Mesa, Arizona for Maria Coffee on Coast to Coast AM. Joe?
Hi, Mrs. Coffey. I think you could be a kindred spirit with Bruce Dickinson. Every time I hear you say something, it's like an Iron Maiden song. Anna, to get you started out, there's a song called Infinite Dreams. But I wanted to ask you if you would ever interview an astronaut or an aquanaut or a victim of the World Trade Center.
Interesting.
I haven't talked to a victim of the World Trade Center, but it's so interesting you ask that because there are, I mean, obviously there are parallels in that experience, you know, of having to live absolutely in the moment, and also of acts of heroism that are, obviously there are parallels of with extreme adventurers, you know, when they're on the mountains or the ocean and have to, you know, make that decision. Is it, you know, do I forget about just my life in order to save somebody else? And I do write about astronauts in the book. I write quite extensively about Edgar Mitchell and his incredible epiphany that he had when he was on his way back from the moon and the Apollo 14 mission, and basically how that completely redirected his life and opened him up spiritually.
I love that part. And yet also when it comes to the 9/11 accounts, there's one person at least who writes that says they don't know for sure that it was some sort of appearance of somebody not from this plane, but somebody who was coming down the steps, moving real quickly, and they remember they made a wrong turn, and somebody redirected them to the stairs, and when they turned back around to see them, there was nobody there.
Interesting.
It's all I remember from just that particular anecdote. But it again, at that moment, at that time, is that somebody that's projecting, that we're projecting from deep inside of our psyche, that we would only listen to if it had been a sort of an externalized experience, or was it something external? Let's get to east of the Rockies. D is in North Carolina on Coast to Coast AM for Maria Coffee. D.
Hi, good morning. I love Coast to Coast, and Ian, I'm telling George about you.
No, please, hello. That's why I brought you into my confidence. Now, don't blow it, okay?
Hey, thank you. Maria, I'm just curious. I saw an awesome movie called Touching the Void.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know about that movie?
Oh, I know Joe well, yeah.
And I just wondered if they had any experiences, you know, that they have spoken about, you know, in relation to what you're talking about.
No, they haven't. I've interviewed both Joe and Simon, who's the guy that cut the rope, and both of them say no.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Tell me about this.
Oh, Touching the Void. Joe Simpson was climbing with his partner Simon in Peru, a climbing partner in Peru, back in the 80s. And they got caught in a storm, and Joe actually broke his leg in a fall, and Simon was lowering him down the mountain in the dark, in the storm, and got to a point where he was just hoping that Joe would find a ledge where he could rest on, but he was just lowering him and lowering him and lowering him, and in the end, he was being pulled off the mountain by Joe's weight. So the only decision he could make was to cut the rope. And he cut the rope, and Joe fell into a crevasse and landed on a ledge and managed eventually, after days, to crawl out of that crevasse. It's an amazing story. Simon actually thought he was dead, was about to leave the mountain some days later, leave their base camp, when suddenly Joe appeared. And so obviously, you know, very profound experiences. And Joe spent, you know, days down in this crevasse finding his way out. But no, I've talked to both of them at length. I interviewed them for this book and my previous book. And both say that they didn't have any paranormal experiences.
So the one guy cuts the rope to the other guy for him to survive, and then the other guy shows up. Was that awkward at first? What's the icebreaker for?
Well, Joe always says that Simon actually saved his life by cutting the rope. Because, you know, he just happened to land on a ledge, and then what he did then was on that ledge in the crevasse, lowered himself down. And eventually found a ceiling in the crevasse and managed to crawl along that. It's an amazing story
that
of survival.
That is an amazing story. Mm-hmm. I have to read that. Mm-hmm. Let's get to Bob in Oregon on Coast to Coast AM for Maria Coffey, West of the Rockies. Bob, go ahead.
Hello, Ian. Always keep a pen around. I learned that with 18 years as a fire and rescue dispatcher.
I try to be better about that.
Maria, I really enjoy hearing your work. I've been researching similar stuff for over 40 years, last 12 years on ESP in combat.
Interesting.
And guys in combat, and women too, although we don't hear much about it, I suppose, have some of the very similar experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Now, two of the references that are really important to me are the work of Tor Nordtranders. Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not.
Okay, he did some research, and it's reported by Dr. Bill Tiller in his book, Some Science Adventures in Real Magic. It indicates that the subconscious mind is handling a million times more information than the conscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is by Professor Colin Blakemore at the Oxford Physiological Laboratory. And in Nature magazine on 24 April of 86, he reported that we have two men to thank, Kenneth Craik and David Marr, for teaching us that the brain itself builds a model of the world. And that model of the world that in our mind might be part of the source of that blue light guiding, because the mind could see where to go and it could generate that light to guide the person.
Kind of a natural GPS.
Yeah.
Interesting thought. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate that. First time caller line, Wade is in Little Rock, Arkansas on Coast to Coast AM for Maria Coffey. Wade?
Yeah, I wanted to respond actually to an individual earlier, but I think several people who tend to treat these experiences like they're all internal and they can't possibly have any kind of external explanation. There is a logical fallacy with stating that that because you can't reproduce these things in perhaps a empirical sort of way, the source must be the mind, and hence it can't possibly be anything external. When you say that about the mind, you're forgetting that your mind is what you generate logic with, and logically you can't invalidate the source of your argument. So, and this is an old argument, what I'm using right here. It's found in like Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance in a book by C.S. Lewis called Miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And empirical examination is only useful for determining things that are empirical in nature, and those things are what you call natural law, you know, gravity, quantum physics, those sorts of things.
Right.
But if there is such a thing as supernatural, it, by definition, it being supernatural, it doesn't conform to natural law. And so you couldn't study it empirically, and attempting to say that, there are unusual effects going on in the brain itself with the chemistry, with endorphins and whatnot, and using that as an excuse to invalidate the experience as having any kind of external source just isn't possible, because everyone's mind functions a little bit differently. So if you were to follow that route, you'd have to invalidate all empirical evidence whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds actually like a really good point, and I appreciate that. I would say, too, though, on top of this, Maria, I mean, I don't know that the first caller on the subject was trying to invalidate so much as he was just trying to categorize these things as being, he wasn't trying to take away from the profundity of the experience, but merely the origin of the profundity. But it does go back to, in a way, it almost doesn't matter to the athletes, to the adventurers, where it comes from, internal, external, they want more of it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And also, just to say that, I mean, what I've learned in in writing this book is that there's still so little known about the nature of consciousness.
Right.
In consciousness studies is one of the most hotly debated topics in science. And, you know, scientists still argue about, you know, what is the mind? You know, is the mind totally within the brain? I mean, it's, you know, this is a really new part of science. So we're almost at the beginning of really understanding these things.
Well, I am conscious of the fact that we have time maybe for two more callers. Let's get Richard from Anchorage. And maybe we'll have time for Brett, too, if we keep our questions and answers short on Coast to Coast. Richard?
Thank you very much. One book I think both you guys should read will help you guys out in this area would be Three Magic Words by U.S. Anderson. And the other thing is I think that you guys are kind of hitting and missing kind of thing, but it's all about what the... you know, like meditators and stuff like that, people that do deep meditations, yogis and stuff like that, they all experience the same kind of stuff. The deal is when these athletes are doing what they're doing, whether it's climbing or doing a deep diving thing, they're being in the present moment, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in the present, okay, you can do the interdimensional awakening and stuff like that. And that's what's going on.
All right.
And you don't have to, like, punish yourself or anything like that.
I actually say that all the way through the book.
Yeah, I think that I'm not sure. You may have come in halfway during the conversation, Richard, because I think Marie even said something very much like that earlier. But it's all throughout the book. It's a good point. It's one she makes. Brett is in Yorba Linda, California, on Coast to Coast AM. Brett?
Yeah, I just wanted to say there's a difference between the manifestation of a shaman and a monk and the extreme sports. Just from personal experience.
Okay, what would be your personal difference with them?
For about the past 4 years, I've been dealing with the supernatural, magical stuff happening to me.
Okay.
For 24 hours a day, every day.
24
and
hours
a day. I could tell you that there's no association with the two.
In your experience. Fair enough. In your experience, there isn't. And that may also be what's also true about explorers of the infinite, that there's variations between those experiencers who are exploring the infinite, too. But there are also similarities, and those are the ones I would encourage other people to go back and read about more of in the book. If they haven't gotten a copy of it, you can link up to her through coasttocoastam.com. And I think we'll have you back on. Let's mark this date on the calendar and add 12 months.
Okay.
Because I know you're going to keep hearing, the longer the book's out there, the more you're going to keep hearing about from other stories from extreme athletes and adventurers, and I want to know them all. Okay?
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a great pleasure.
Have a large time in the Galapagos.
I will.
Pet a turtle for me or something.
I will. I'll say hi to a blue-footed booby.
I love
especially
that.
From you.
The more boobies, the better. I've always said that. God bless you and have a wonderful week and a great spring. And Deus te amat, and I do too.